I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove from the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Sarah Blacker is a singer and songwriter from Boston, Massachusetts, who has spent the last year touring the country in support of her 2009 debut album called The Only Way Out Is Through. In true DIY form, she funded her record through fan donations and is in the process of raising money to finance a brand new album that is currently in the works. Sarah visited central Pennsylvania in October of 2010 to perform at a songwriter showcase at the Lancaster Dispensing Company in Lancaster, and to perform at My Rural Radio's Fall Music Festival in Stewartstown. Well, joining me in the Woodstove House is Sarah Blacker, all the way from Boston, Massachusetts. Sarah is a singer and a songwriter, and she's in Lancaster tonight to perform at a songwriter showcase at the Lancaster Dispensing Company. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to Pennsylvania.
Thanks for having me.
I see on your schedule that you've been spending some time and will be spending some time in Pennsylvania.
I have. I can't get away from this hexagonal state that just seems endless.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
There's an endless amount of opportunity.
The land of opportunity.
That's
Pennsylvania.
Right.
Before we get into the music, your record, the latest record, I'd like to talk a little bit about your work as a music therapist.
Sure.
Particularly with the Advocates for Autism of Massachusetts. Talk about that experience that you had recently.
Well, the fundraiser that I did for the Advocates of Autism was at the Hard Rock Cafe. That was actually a couple of years ago, and it was a huge success, but I went to school and studied music therapy, and since then I've been practicing private practice and in different hospitals and schools, and somehow I ended up with a caseload of mostly kids with autism.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
There's so many children who are being diagnosed with autism, and it's such a wide spectrum that music being such a flexible modality, you can kind of use it as the framework to work on a lot of really important skills to, you know, be a part of today's society.
And how has that informed the music that you write and the music that you make?
Well, for me, music and songwriting has always been sort of my music therapy. So being able to understand the process of writing a song and actually writing songs with other people has made it easier for me to write songs, because you sort of have a template and a framework to work on. And it's also shaped my skills as a musician, sort of being able to improvise and play a lot of different instruments and respond to the moment, you know, sonically.
Sure.
Whether it's with changes in dynamics or different melodies that reflect kind of the mood of the show, or, you know, just learning how to better connect with your audience.
Absolutely,
through,
yeah,
you know, maybe even writing a song with the audience.
You've been compared to Joni Mitchell, Ella Fitzgerald. Those are some pretty big shoes. Where are you at with that? What are your influences?
Well, I mean, absolutely, Joni Mitchell is a huge influence. Her life has bizarre similarities to mine, so I've connected to her on the level of, you know, personal history. But I did study jazz vocals, so Ella, I don't know. I don't mind the comparisons, but I would say, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of classic rock and found like kind of grunge and singer-songwriters in my adolescence. And since then, you know, kind of the sky's the limits as far as what the influences are. But I really love a great song and a really unique voice. So I find influence in those things more than anything else.
Let's talk about the album that was released about a year ago, October 2009. Your debut CD, The Only Way Out Is Through, was released, co-produced by, I'm not going to be able to pronounce Rob's last name.
Loyat.
Rob Loyat,
yeah.
And Sean McLaughlin.
Mm-hmm. He did the Irish pronunciation. Well done. Everyone says McLaughlin, but I go with the McLaughlin too.
Where was it recorded?
It was recorded at Noise in the Attic Studios in Scituate, Mass., which is sort of on a marsh down on the southern coast, almost on Cape Cod in Massachusetts.
And what was, if you could say in a word, what was your vision for this record? What, you know, when you started it, being the first one, I don't know if you've done records with bands or anything prior to this, so.
Just, you know, some recordings here and there. A lot of home demos had really been all that I'd done. I did a lot of, you know, ghetto blaster demos,
yeah, sure.
And stacked harmonies in my bedroom. But the vision for this was mostly just to fulfill a dream. I kind of didn't think it would ever happen, and you know, I went through stacks and stacks of demos and songs and sort of selected the ones that really stood out the most. And then through that, as Rob would say, we established the sonic signature. And it was, you know, it came out sort of very pristine and roots rock. And we got a little weird, but not as weird as we possibly could have.
Over 400 songs to your credit.
Yeah.
How did you possibly boil that down to 11?
Well, you know, every painter doesn't necessarily hang on to every piece of paper they've ever painted on.
Sure, right.
So for me, learning how to play music was through writing songs. Mm. So I would just sit down and, you know, maybe someone had showed me a cool chord. So I'd sit down and start playing that chord and, you know, in a few minutes have a song. And maybe those songs never escaped the confines of, you know, the square footage I was sitting in when it happened. But, you know, a lot, like we were talking about before the interview, a lot of them are on these tapes that exist in a box in a closet in a basement. And they might stay there forever. So, you know, some of the songs never see the light of day, but they get you to the songs that do.
Was there any kind of process that you went through, or was it really just a gut thing to pick the songs to record?
Well, it was a combination of Rob and I deciding, because he did help to produce the record. So there were songs that I knew I wanted to be on the record. And then quite a few of them actually got written during the process of choosing the songs. Like, I'd show up and we'd, you know, have chosen five of the songs, and I'd show up and say, okay, well, I have three more demos. And of course, you know, the more you write songs, the better you think they are.
Right, your best song is always your last song.
Right, your new kid is your favorite.
Don't tell the kids.
I won't tell anybody that.
Let's talk about some of these songs that made it on the record. Let's start with Bad I've Been. There's a couple of really playful songs.
Yep,
that's one of them. Yeah, yeah. Tell me about that one.
Well, it was sort of the letter that I wrote to my folks apologizing for this particular career choice, because nobody wants their kid driving hours upon hours and crashing on couches and, you know, eating Subway and all that good stuff that comes along with being a touring musician at first. So it was my honest apology, yet, you know, I guess humble and exuberant admittance that this is where I'm going and this is what I'm going to do, so you better deal with it. And they have, so it's been cool. It's been cool to watch them get on board.
Dear Mom and Dad, if you knew just how bad I've been at making it into work lately, you put nails in the tires and my irresponsible desires and give my ball and chain a holy jerk. But I can't lie.
Some of the more singer-songwriter songs.
Yeah.
One of them in particular stands out, Sandpiper.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that one a little bit?
Sure. My folks, I guess it's been almost 2 years ago now, but they recently decided to collaborate on a lifelong dream of finding a place to live beyond where we all spent my formative years and my older brother's years. So they moved to the ocean in Hull, Mass, and the sandpiper was one of the first things that I saw there. It's a little bird that sort of scurries along the beach and, you know, pecks incessantly at whatever it sees and then just moves really quickly and takes off. And the sandpiper, you know, the way I wrote it was like, look at this dream that you guys have realized together. You finally agreed on something. You've spent your lives raising us, and now this is your choice, and this is like the start of the next chapter for the rest of your life. So that's for them. The first time I played it for my mom was in our kitchen, and I came downstairs after writing it and I just started bawling. I was like, I have a song for you. And we both just sat there and we're like, oh my God. And I couldn't even get through the first verse. And eventually I've moved to a place where I've stopped crying every time I play it if they're at the show. But it started off that way.
That's good. It could get a little awkward for the audience.
Right? Yep. Then everyone else starts crying and right. People leave and slit their wrists.
Especially in a bar.
Right.
The sandpiper's call is for you this time. He's soaring on the winds of all you dare to hope for. And I hope for all your dreams to come true. Yeah, I hope for all your dreams to come true this time. Yeah, I hope for all your dreams to come true.
Count Pennies is a song that that brings the rock. You want to talk about that one a little bit?
Sure. Well, I was in a relationship a little while ago, and this fellow was really sort of taking me for a ride and not being open and talking about really anything that was going on. So that's sort of my kind of, I'm not going to swear, but can I?
Go ahead.
Okay, that's sort of my f*** you song to this fellow. You know, tell me what's going on or get the hell out.
Right.
And, you know, it was, I kind of wrote that one as a joke, actually. I wrote it because I wanted to do, like, that's my version of a pop song. It's my version of, like, sure. A, you, I'm a chick, and get out of my life.
Right.
Pop song. And, it turned out to be one that people really liked, and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I don't really want anyone to hear this song. And the theme of counting pennies is because when I was a little kid, my parents used to put on a lot of Stephen King movies. My mom's a big Stephen King fan. And they told me if I started getting scared while the movies were on, I could count pennies. They gave me a jar of pennies to count. And I just remember that jar of pennies sitting there, and I'd like be frozen on the end of the bed watching people get killed and their heads sawed open and things like that.
Yeah, because you could just not watch the movie rather than sort of this interesting trick to just not be scared while that.
Right, but they're so captivating. I mean, who doesn't want to have nightmares?
When you're about an inch away from my face, why don't you just tell me instead of saying quiet things? I'm longing for the winter for to hold myself up and drink upon the poison that makes my space so tiny, but at least it can quiet my mind. I'm tired of counting pennies when I feel a little scared. 'Cause if you can't give me any, well, I wanna be aware of it.
I think that, I think the standout track for me, in my opinion, is the story song.
Yeah.
There's really a lot to it, and I particularly like the piano track.
Yeah.
What's the story behind the song, and then talk a little bit about the music, the arrangements.
Well, the original vision behind the song was sort of modeled after when someone goes off to war and never comes home again. And I was in a relationship with a person this past year, and they were gone for so much of the time. They're actually a touring musician before I was touring. And I really had to learn what it was like to trust and have faith in something that wasn't there most mm-hmm. of the time. So it was sort of my way of coping with the fact that someone might show up and say, well, this person's never coming back again, and how are you going to deal with that? And sort of just the magic that is there that could possibly exist when someone's not around. But I can't even imagine what it would be like for someone to show up at your door and just say, I'm really sorry, you know? This person's just never going to come back again.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. So the piano really captured that emotion, too.
Yeah, it caught my ear,
mm-hmm.
you know, as the music sort of plays in the background and I'm listening to things. That song kept pulling me over to really dig a little deeper into it.
Yeah, it's sort of the Tom Waits technique where you highlight an instrument, you know, per really powerful song, and that instrument kind of embodies the emotion and ties it all together.
Who played the piano on that?
A guy named Jeff Calder. He was a friend of Rob Loyot's, and I'd never heard him play, and Rob was like, let's bring him in. He can play everything and anything and make any sound with his organ and his keyboard and this and that, and he was unbelievable. I just, like, wept. Again, I did a lot of crying on this album.
And I know that you're breathing, but still, you take my breath away. And I know you're leaving, but still, I wish that you would stay. Baby, I know you're breathing, but still, you take my breath away. And I know you're leaving, but still, I wish you would stay, baby.
I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. My guest today is Sarah Blacker, a prolific singer-songwriter and touring musician from Boston. Sarah was also recently featured on a dance track by Egyptian DJ Sheha. So there's a song that's not on the album that I'd like to talk about, and that is a collaboration that you did with two Egyptian DJs.
Right.
The song is called Am Alive.
It was actually called I'm Alive, but these fellows, their first language is not English. So I believe they interpreted I'm Alive to Am Alive. And that's what stuck for the track upon its release.
What was that experience like? How did you, first of all, how did you get hooked up with these guys? And then what was it like collaborating on this music?
I was living in Lawrence, Kansas, and I was waiting tables at a Middle Eastern restaurant. Hmm. And a good friend of the youngest brother of the family that owned it was named Mahmoud, and he's DJ Sheha. And he said to me, you know, I know you sing. I'd really love you to sing on this song. Could you write lyrics and a melody, and let's do a song together? So he'd come up with a beat, and he gave me the beat and the tracks to it. And all I could think of for the chorus was I'm Alive. And I showed up with all the words and concepts and lyrics. And it just happened so quickly. Like, he gave me the tape, and I went home, and I wrote it in like 20 minutes and then went to his house. And he's like, that's exactly what I wanted the chorus to say. Like, words... That's what I heard for the chorus was I'm Alive. And it was just kind of like very eerie and strange. So we demoed it at his apartment and then went to a pro studio in Kansas. And, you know, he's like, I'm a big deal back home. I'm from Egypt. I'm going to go home and we're going to get this signed. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And like literally 3 or 4 years later, he calls me up and he's like, I just want to let you know that this song just got signed by Martin Roth, who's kind of a big name, and it got picked up by Frisky Records. And
nice.
I don't know, he sent me the link to the video and I heard it, and they really worked some magic on the track from where we started it. And
yeah,
I don't know, it's been cool to hear the remixes.
So is singing on dance tracks something that you're considering doing more of in the future?
It's something I've always dreamed about doing. A couple record labels wrote to me after they heard the release, and they were like, you should, you know, contact other DJs and follow up with this. And it really happened at the same time as the release of this record, so I've kind of been focusing on that.
Yeah,
But down the line, I'd really love to.
Subtle light, you are the keeper of desire. In the night, you are the true fire. Your tips touch me, reach out, set my soul ablaze. I ignite when you fall to my gaze. Open flame, you are the passion in my eyes.
talk about the road, because you're traveling. You're traveling a lot. Tell me what it's like to be a touring musician in 2010.
It kind of is what you make it. You can make it into an experience that allows you to see parts of the country and meet people and experience food, or you can just gruel and go and do and, you know, show up and play and then leave. But I think what has been the most important is finding balance, you know, finding a way to make it through the day by making sure you eat good food and get good rest and, you know, not necessarily, you know, talking to every single person in the bar if you're about to fall over and die, you know.
Sure.
You just have to find a way to be balanced. But
right.
I don't know. It is a balance as well of, like, some really, really great shows and really, really great venues. And you can't expect to have a phenomenal show every single night. So you have the shows that really boost morale. And I've learned it's really important to tour with somebody. So my manager, Ronnie, usually comes along, and my dog, Beasley.
Nice.
And, you know, we're kind of a family. We're a team.
You're the second touring musician that I've talked to in a week who takes a dog on the road.
I've been asked about how that is a lot.
And how is it?
You know, at this point, we've met a lot of people and re-met the people, too. So it's kind of like we have families when we show up in different cities.
Yeah.
And Beasley's kind of a celebrity dog. So he shows up and people expect him. And he's getting a little weary. The last tour, he kind of hid under whatever chair we were able to keep him by for most of the time. But a lot of venues down south typically let the dogs come inside. And, you know, if we're going to stay at someone's house, they know that the dog's going to be there too.
So
they've got to be okay with that. And, you know, when it's been warm enough, we've been able to tie him up outside and sort of, you know, watch him from a window. Or Ronnie and I trade off, you know, checking him out if he's in the car and making sure. What's been great, though, is actually having him along to get exercise.
So
if we find, like, a park, we'll GPS a park and get off and run around with him for a while. So he keeps us balanced, too.
Let's talk about the new album. So you've got this new album in the works, very prolific. First album just came out a year ago, and now already another one that's almost done.
Yeah.
When Boys Cry, is that the working title or the title?
It's the working title. It's that or Come What May. I'm between the two of those. So you can look for those.
So you're doing something pretty interesting with this. It's kind of a trend in music today. And that is using a website to raise money to help fund the record.
Yeah.
In this case, you're using the website called Kickstarter?
Yep, kickstarter.com.
And how's that been going?
It's been going really well. It's, you know, you set a goal and as if you don't, like, talk to your fans enough and ask them to come out to your shows, now you're asking them for money. So in that way, it's humbling and you just hope that you're not driving people away by saying, hey, believe in me and what I'm doing. And but it's been really wonderful to see people come around and offer their support. But what's cool about Kickstarter is you offer rewards. So anytime somebody offers you some money, you can say, hey, well, I'm going to repay you with this cool compilation CD or some MP3 downloads or videos or house concert, you know, whatever it is you stack on your list of opportunities for people that decide to throw you some cash. And so it's expensive to record.
Yeah, how close are you to fully funding the new record?
We have about, I think, $900 to go.
Wow.
So
that's incredible.
Yeah, so with I think there's like 6 days left. So we're hoping that people come through on these last 6 days, because if they don't, then we don't get any of the money.
Oh.
So, but people have been great. So I'm hoping, you know, in the next 6 days, everyone's like, oh, I can.
So do you have the balance in your bank account that you can kick in so you can get the rest of the money?
Maybe.
You probably.
I'll figure something out.
Might be a good contingency plan.
I'll figure something out.
Cash out a credit card.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I've never heard of that model.
Yeah, that's the one drawback about Kickstarter. Because this album I did an independent, the first album I did an independent fundraiser, and offered rewards and things like that, but it wasn't through a site that said, hey, if you don't get the whole thing, you're not getting any of it.
So what's the trade-off then? What's the benefit of using Kickstarter?
I think it's sort of like a social networking site, so people find it really friendly and they can see... I mean, the rewards themselves, I think, are what make it for people, too. And Kickstarter recommends you use a video and sort of tell a story. And it's kind of a website that you can repost on all your, you know, social networking sites that you may or may not post on.
Right.
So.
You never use your words to say the things I hear you say with your eyes. So how am I supposed to know just what you hold inside. Inside, so come now. Oh, come, my brother, won't you come? Brother, won't you come?
Can you give me a few CDs that you could not live without?
Sure. I'd go for The Beatles' Abbey Road, Paul Simon, Graceland, and Ray LaMontagne's Trouble.
So you are the absolutely most prepared person that I've ever asked that question.
Well, as soon as I saw that question, I was like, oh my God, how am I ever going to answer that?
Most people say that when I ask it on the show. Oh my God, how am I going to answer that?
You know, it's just those albums that like you could play from start to finish in your head. But if you never heard them again, you might just, you know, dissipate, die.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
You as well. Thanks for having me.
Good luck with a weekend of shows in Central Pennsylvania and with all of your shows and the new album coming up.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Sarah Blacker is a singer and songwriter from Boston. Her album, The Only Way Out Is Through, is available at all the usual web channels. Find out more by visiting her online at sarahblacker.com or link up from our website, woodstovehouse.com. You can listen to past episodes, find show notes, or click the email link to send feedback. Around the Wood Stove is a production of the Wood Stove House. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com. The guy doing my driveway right now is a huge DJ in Amsterdam.
Really?
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.